morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone gets a non-permanent seat on the UN Security Council.
Our presence on the United Nations Security Council represents our unique success as a democratic and peaceful country of resilience and unbounded optimism.
Malawi revokes the citizenship of refugees wanted abroad. An immigrant from Nigeria has been sworn in as the new mayor of the U.S. city of Colorado Springs, Colorado. World Food Safety Day today, Wednesday, warns consumers of foodborne illnesses that affect more than 1 million people per day. Nigerian workers suspend a scheduled strike against rising fuel prices.
The government got a restraining order. Yes, they went and procured a restraining order against the NLC, stopping us from embarking on our strike.
And Botswana challenges European countries over a hunting trophy ban. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone is celebrating being selected to join the UN Security Council as a non-permanent member for 2024-2025. The country returns to the Security Council after a 52-year wait. From Freetown, reporter Calvin Lewis has the details.
In a voice going hoarse from days of campaigning for a second term, the country's president, Julius Maada Bio, took to national television to celebrate the successful vote, calling it a generational accomplishment.
Our presence on the United Nations Security Council represents our unique success as a democratic and peaceful country of resilience and unbounded optimism, one that successfully transitioned from war to peace while working in partnership with the United Nations. A country no longer defined by the stigma of the past, a beacon of hope and fortitude. A country that has gained immense global respect for investing in its people and protecting and promoting and protecting the rights of women. A place of peace and great belief that the future will be better, brighter, more just, and more peaceful because of the investments we are making in an inclusive and sustainable future.
Information Minister Mohamed Sware says the country will now be able to make its views known to the world body.
Yes, we believe Sierra Leone stands to benefit tremendously because this is the global forum where key and critical decisions affecting the world are taken. For example, issues around global security, issues around climate change and emerging global issues, right? That is where these issues are discussed. So Sierra Leone will not have the benefit of sitting right where the action is.
Retired diplomat Ambassador Sule Dayami says the Security Council seat positions Sierra Leone to be the voice of other small states.
And I'm sure that is a heavyweight in terms of being listened to, in terms of seeking support from, in terms of having them in your camp. And as Sierra Leone has always been a very polite, very peaceful, and has been amiable in relations with most of the countries, I think Africa is pleased to have a country of Sierra Leone's kind to represent them in an organization like that.
Ambassador Dayami agrees that Sierra Leone is well positioned to speak for other small nations.
So it benefits Sierra Leone because Sierra Leone stands as a defender of states of equal measure. Sierra Leone, because of its size, because of its population, because of its level of development in the world, will therefore become the champion of all developing countries to be able to present their case from a perspective of knowledge, from a perspective of having gone through the same conditions. They'll be able to defend cases of underdeveloped countries in the world stage.
Coming just weeks before a general election on June 24th, the government is already using the issue in their campaign. The president says it was all part of his 2018 manifesto, which means he has delivered on his promise. The question for many, however, is how can this move make their lives better? For VOA Africa, I'm Kelvin Lewis reporting from Freetown, Sierra Leone.
The Nigeria Labour Congress and the Trade Union Congress have suspended their nationwide strike over the government's decision to end fuel subsidy. The strike was scheduled to take place today, Wednesday, but yesterday, Tuesday, the government filed an injunction to allow both sides to work out their differences over the workers' demand for a wage increase to cushion the fuel price hike brought on by the end of the subsidy. Emmanuel Ubuaja is the Secretary General of the Nigeria Labour Congress. He tells me that Labour will continue to seek solutions because workers depend on government intervention to reduce and not raise fuel prices.
The government got a restraining order. Yes, they went and procured a restraining order against the NLC, stopping us from embarking on our strike. We were in talks with them, so we have been able to extract some framework for further discussions. And the return date for the court is on the 19th. And on the 19th, we'll be meeting with them again to see how to get some grip on the subsidy removal situation.
Now, when you say the government issued a restraining order, what does that mean?
They went to the National Industrial Court and obtained a court injunction stopping the NLC from proceeding on the strike. It was gotten ex parte. We were not put on notice. We were not heard. The court only listened to the government and then gave its order. So that situation is with our lawyers. They are studying it, and we'll follow up on that on the legal front.
I think one of the questions you addressed the other day was why not give the incoming president some time before you can go on strike?
He didn't give himself some time before he made the pronouncement he made. He was the one who didn't give himself an opportunity. He was the one who made a pronouncement that caused quite an upheaval within the polity, particularly on the ordinary poor people, the working people.
If the government suspends the fuel subsidy, what is the likely impact on the ordinary people?
It's massive. You recall Nigeria has been grappling with the challenge of insecurity. Clearly, there's a tendency that might be impacted because most livelihoods are going to be lost. Nigerian economy, the informal sector, is driven by SMS, by PMS, petrol. Be it tiny generators for vulcanizing, for head salons, for tailoring. In a country where the electricity density is very low, you then realize that people had become their own providers of what would have been public energy supply, and that they have done using PMS. There is no formal public transport system in Nigeria. It's individual-based, funded taxis, buses, and people surviving basically on a daily basis. So everything gradually is tripling in terms of costs. And there's no economy in the world that can handle that. There's no populace in the world that can handle a 300% increase. It's like a war situation. So if nothing happens very rapidly, of course, people's livelihood is going to be impacted. People's standard of living is going to be impacted. The fallout of that in a troubled, security-challenged country is better imagined.
You met with the incoming government. We understand that the talks were continuing. What happened in the talks?
We are trying to find out from them what are the immediate, what are the intermediate, and what are the long-time measures they intend to put up to handle this situation. Clearly, what they have is very mega. It's not heartwarming, but the talks continue.
Now, with the injunction, what will happen next?
We hope to have our lawyers discharge that so that we'll be able to discuss go on further with the discussions with less pressure. But also, where that fails and discussions don't go too well, the government has ingeniously taken the initiative out of our hands and basically placed it in the hands of unorganized actors.
Emmanuel Uboaja is the Secretary General of the Nigeria Labour Congress. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. The U.S. city of Colorado Springs, a Republican Party stronghold in the state of Colorado, has elected its first black mayor. Yemi Mobolade, an immigrant from Nigeria, was sworn in yesterday, Tuesday. In this exclusive interview with reporter Haruna Shehu of VOA Hausa Language Service, Mobolade says his victory is an example of leaders who can transcend today's tribal politics and bring people together. Mobolade also called on immigrants to continue to take advantage of the opportunities provided by living in a country like the United States and run for public office if they can, to help build a better world.
What's significant about this win, and this is a message to leaders globally, is our world is hungry for more than tribalism, partisan politics, and they're hungry for leaders who can transcend all of that and put our quality of life ahead of party politics. And that's the statement that we've made in this city.
Colorado Springs is traditionally a Republican area.
Right.
2 years ago, or even 1 year ago, when you ask someone, he might tell you, your story is not going to be possible.
Oh, I heard that quite a bit.
So what convinced you to go ahead, to push ahead?
You know, part of the immigrant story is that we see opportunities. We see possibilities. I've been clear that, you know, while things are not perfect in the U.S., I mean, we're still blessed more than many. I grew up in Lagos, Nigeria, and I know what my origins were like. And so when you're in a land like this and you see nothing but opportunities, you pursue it, you fight for it. I'm the product of just the coaching and investment of many leaders, so I'm committed to paying it forward. To whom much is given, much is required. So, and then the last thing is, when you look at the world, the state of the world around you, and you realize it's not great, and sometimes it feels like it's getting worse, instead of looking around to see who's going to fix the problem, who's going to step up, you have to be the change you want to see in the world. So I did raise my hands, and my family and I, we raised our hands to say, here we are, send us. And it paid off.
What are your vision for this great city?
I've been clear about this vision from day one in the campaign, is that Colorado Springs will become an inclusive, culturally rich, economically prosperous, safe, and vibrant city on a hill that shines brightly, that we become the model city for the world of what it looks like when residents and citizens and leaders work together in this wonderful harmony. We can solve any problem. So those four things that I envision, if I do my job well, we will look more inclusive, we'll become more culturally rich, we'll become more safe, because a lot of families want a safe city, and also it will become economically prosperous.
There are so many people like you, I mean immigrants. What message, I know you have said something, but what message do you have for immigrants in this country?
Oh gosh, how much time do we have? we have a wonderful opportunity to bring to the table what's best of us as Americans. We have this incredible opportunity to have one leg on the outside and one leg on the inside. So what President Reagan calls this fresh perspective. The way we talk about the U.S., the way we talk about opportunities, I mean, it's very different. We're a nation of immigrants. That's how we were birthed. So in a weird way, we get to restore the very essence of who this country is meant to be, because we see opportunities. We have the hustle, the desire to just keep making things better. And that's what we need. So to my fellow immigrants, from folks that are interested in running for office, which I've, you know, there's actually a city council member in Westminster, Colorado, who's a Nigerian. I met him last week, so I'm really proud of him. And he's so inspired by what I've done. And across the country, and even Nigerians and immigrants who are working in regular jobs, or they find themselves in a nonprofit space, my message is, your city needs you. You have a lot more to offer. Stop hiding, and you will be surprised that if someone like me can be embraced and respected, you too can be embraced and respected. You just have to see yourself beyond the messages that you're telling yourself, that you're just an immigrant, like you have nothing to offer. No, our nation needs you. So it's my call for you to join me in this quest as we try to make our cities and towns and communities just an incredible place to live, work, play, and worship.
That was Yemi Mobolade, an immigrant from Nigeria who was sworn in yesterday, Tuesday, as mayor of the U.S. city of Colorado Springs in the state of Colorado. He spoke with reporter Haruna Shehu of VOA's Hausa Language Service. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 7th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Malawi's government has started revoking the citizenship of refugees and asylum seekers who they say obtained their status fraudulently. Officials say the campaign is aimed at flushing out criminals from other countries, including Rwanda genocide suspects, but critics say the program is too broad and will ensnare legitimate refugees. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Minister of Homeland Security Zikali Ngoma told a televised press conference Monday that Malawi received a request from Rwanda to help track down about 55 criminals wanted for various charges who are staying in Malawi. Ngoma said the fugitives could not be found easily because they might have changed their identities and are using Malawian names. As part of the manhunt, he said the government is revoking passports and citizenships that were fraudulently obtained.
We want to tighten our security and ensure that whosoever obtained a passport in a manner that is not normal, we have to confiscate that passport. And whoever got a citizenship without following the right procedures will also revoke that citizenship.
In 2020, Malawi's High Court sentenced the former Minister of Homeland Security, Uladi Musa, to 6 years in jail for issuing fraudulent citizenships and passports to Burundians and Rwandans. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
The World Health Organization and the Food and Agriculture Organization say at least 1.6 million people worldwide fall ill from eating contaminated food every day. They say contaminated food kills at least 420,000 people each year. And as the world marks Food Safety Day today, Wednesday, the United Nations is calling on member states to protect consumers' health. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Over 600 million people get sick due to hundreds of different types of illnesses that can be transmitted by food, according to a report by the World Health Organization in collaboration with the Food and Agriculture Organization. Young people and populations with limited resources are among the most affected. WHO Assistant Director General Maria Neira says food safety has a direct impact on human health.
Over 200 diseases are caused by eating contaminated food. Some are mild, but others can be deadly. We tend to think about food safety only when we get sick, and we should think more often because foodborne diseases are entirely preventable.
Global statistics from WHO indicates that at least 340 children under the age of 5 died due to preventable foodborne diseases daily. Rebecca Muhoe is the Chief Executive Officer, Micro Enterprise Support Program Trust, an organization in Kenya that works to provide financial or business development services to improve the performance of enterprises. Speaking during the World Food Safety Day Summit in Nairobi, she said that there has been a challenge in ensuring food safety in Kenya since there is not enough support from the government.
Today we know that foodborne diseases caused by chemicals, viruses, bacteria and parasites kill hundreds of thousands of people every year. And those most affected are children under 5 years. It is also a fact that the lack of hygiene and presence of parasites are two major causes of foodborne illnesses and antimicrobial resistance, which is an emerging threat throughout the world.
With this year's theme of Food Safety Day being Food Standard Saves Life, the WHO and Food and Agriculture Organization have embarked on highlighting the importance of food standards in preventing foodborne illnesses. The WHO links diseases like diarrhea and cancers to consumption of contaminated food. Naira says the WHO has called for action from various sectors and policymakers who are urged to establish robust national food safety systems that comply with established standards.
Food safety standards protect everyone's lives. They are key to ensuring safety and quality. And that's why WHO, together with FAO, leads global experts groups and provides scientific advice to develop international food safety standards to protect consumers' health. Safe food allows the uptake of nutrients and promotes human development. Nobody should die from eating food.
With millions of people losing lives from contaminated food, the United Nations has called on food businesses to work with their employees, suppliers, and other stakeholders to develop a food safety culture, while educational institutions and workplaces are urged to promote safe food handling. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
Botswana says it will engage representatives of Germany and the European Parliament over campaigns to ban hunting animal trophies, the majority of which come from Africa. In March, the United Kingdom passed a law that bans their importation. From Habaruni, Botswana, reporter Umkundise Dube has the details.
Conservation groups across Europe are putting pressure on their governments to ban the import of trophy hunting of exotic wildlife. Botswana allows trophy hunting and says any move to stop the export of the products will harm its conservation programs. The European Parliament and Germany are pushing to effect the ban as well, saying it puts additional pressure on endangered wildlife and ecosystems. Botswana's Minister of Environment and Tourism says it is engaging with representatives from the European Parliament as well as Germany's Minister of Environment on the issue. Botswana says moves to ban hunting trophies will hurt the livelihoods of communities that grapple with growing wildlife populations. Some of the income from trophy hunting, the Botswana government says, is used in conservation programs, particularly in communities facing human-elephant conflict. Botswana Wildlife Producers Association Chief Executive Isaac Theophilus condemns their campaigns against trophy hunting.
The position is misguided. It's not based on science, and it's not going to benefit conservation in general in Africa and the rest of the world. That is a clear case of neo-colonial mentalities that are imposed on African countries.
He adds the bans will only punish countries like Botswana, which have what he called progressive conservation programs.
Our position is very clear that we subscribe to sustainable utilization of our resources, including wildlife, which in this particular case is also beneficial for those communities that are living side by side with wildlife. So what is happening in Europe, or in Germany in particular, will punish those communities.
Hunting also is seen as a way of reducing human-animal conflicts, such as damage to crops by grazing herds or loss of livestock to predators. Botswana reintroduced trophy hunting in 2019, and last season communities raised $5 million, mostly from overseas hunters. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habaroni, Botswana.
And that's it for this Wednesday, June 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a very good Wednesday.
We are bringing women voices to the conversation on things that matter to the hearts and minds of women. From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent. We hear your voices. Our voices. Right here on VOA on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.